You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. The following program may contain adult themes, discussion, and content that some people may find offensive. If you consider yourself likely to be offended, then perhaps you'd like to tune to another frequency for the next hour. If you have any feedback or would like to see information about our other shows, please go online to radioreverb.com.
Good evening, welcome to the HRV Hour on this Thursday evening. I'm in the studio with the lovely David.
Hello, yes, my name is David. I'm in the studio with the lovely Josh.
Thank you, David. We're here in the studio again. That's nice, isn't it?
We are, yes. So, without the agony auntie today, so just the two agony uncles.
Yeah, we've no Sue or Stephen or...
No, but they all send their love.
Yeah, so they do. They're on other projects at this time, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they work full-time and have other jobs. You know, we're all volunteers, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. So, what have you been up to since we last spoke?
So, I've been... Now that we've had a little bit of nice weather, I've been looking to get myself a little bit fitter after my winter hibernation. So, I've been looking at some old... just gentle walks that I used to do, and I hope to be doing them with a community group called Peer Link, which is part of the Sussex Beacon. So that's going to be launching in the next month or two or three. So I've just been doing some research as to what we can do as a group of people living with HIV, just to get out into the countryside and enjoy the lovely countryside that we do have in our national parks and in our urban areas here in Brighton and Hove.
Yes, well, it's coming into that season now, isn't it? It's nice to see things grow and...
The tulips have done their thing now. The bluebells are starting to come out.
Yeah, so it's nice, isn't it? People are wearing shorts.
Yes, that's always nice.
But some people wear shorts all year round.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Get the shorties out and shorter skirts.
Yeah.
Have you got a shorter skirt on?
Not today, no.
No, okay.
That's a weekend kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
moving on. What have you been up to, Josh?
Oh, what have I been? I've been working on a new track for Worthing Pride. That's when we're going to. It's going to be the first.
Oh, it's going to be the debut, is it?
It's going to be our debut of Worthing Pride, me and Azora. Yes.
Yeah.
So I've been working on the track yesterday. So it's very exciting.
Yes. Yeah.
It's interesting because I set down the basic track, and then we go over to a great guy in Worthing, to his studios, and he kind of helps and starts
with
to
the
develop
production
it more.
Of it.
But also adding to it, and so it's been good. It's just exciting
because I enjoyed the music, which came out last year.
There's going to be an anthem, a bit of a gay anthem, to be honest.
Right.
So we want
not a national anthem.
No, not national anthem. No.
It has been said we need a new one. Some people find our current one a bit
plodding. No, I don't think I'm going to do the national anthem.
No, you're not going to do a national anthem.
No,
just
it's a gay
one.
It's a gay one.
Okay.
Well, it's good to,
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's good. It's
exciting because it's very different to radio presenting, isn't it? You're still with the mixing desk, but you're playing with sound, aren't you? Just so, I love people who can do that creatively.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. And to see someone who's a professional and who does it professionally.
For a job.
I learn quite a lot, so it's great.
Great. Well, good luck. I look forward to hearing it on the show.
Yes, we're getting there. Yes, we're getting there.
We are. What else is on the show today, Josh?
So today we've got a great interview with my pal, Duncan Lustig. Duncan Lustig Preen. Is that how you say it, Duncan?
That's how you say it.
Sorry, I think it's just being in the studio has just thrown me a little bit today.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah. So we've got a really good interview with you. I'm talking about your career in the Royal Navy and things like that, and leading up to you've got an event coming out, haven't you, soon from the festival?
Yes, I'm doing a show. I'm actually doing it to raise some funds for Brighton Fringe, which is a charity.
Yeah.
Brilliant. We'll talk about that later after the song. But yeah, so excited you've come on the show. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
And we've got some stories. So we've got some other stories, haven't we?
We have, yes. We've got some international stories. I've got stories from Pakistan, from India, from America, from the UK. We have some local news in terms of a job opportunity for people that want to get in and become a HIV support worker. All the stuff that people have sent us in and we've discovered through trolling through the international and national news. So, good stuff.
Well, I've got a couple of stories as well. Is it CROI conference?
Conference of Opportunistic Infections. Is that the one?
That's the one. Yeah. So I saw in one of my emails that they've done like 5 points for different things and this is for growing older. So
it
came out of the conference.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be reading those.
Oh, look forward to that.
There's four actually, not five.
Yeah.
And just thinking about PrEP and another thing from that conference.
Great.
About how PrEP is finding it hard to get it out there, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just a little... some groups that are sort of under resourced in terms of getting prep when they need it, aren't they?
Yeah, and people aren't taking up on it. So it's just finding ways of getting it out there.
Yeah.
Get it out there. That's my slogan.
Catchphrase.
So anyway, shall we just move on quickly? We'll have a track.
Yes.
It's all going to be a bit nautical listening to the music today. So we'll start with The Sea by Mochiba.
Oh, great song.
Yeah, I love it. And then we'll come back with Duncan. Welcome back to the HRV Hour on 97.2 FM and RadioReverb.com online. Oh, you can get it on DAB Plus as well, which is...
Yeah, DAB, yes.
So anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah.
That was Mochiba, The Sea, which is such a good album, that, isn't it?
It is, yeah, iconic, yeah.
So in the studio is our good friend Duncan Listig-Preen. How are you doing, Duncan?
I'm good. How are you, Josh?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for coming. Sorry about my mix-up at the beginning. I am a professional, kind of.
Yes, you are. Of course you are.
So we'll just start. You're part of the festival, aren't you? So we'll just
Brighton
start with
Fringe, isn't
Fringe.
It?
So yeah, the Brighton Fringe. So could you just tell us a little bit about what you're doing?
Well, I chair the Fringe.
Yes.
This is my fourth Fringe, in fact, as chair. It's an amazing event. This year, bigger than ever. 840 acts spread across more than 150 venues throughout the city. And some 4,700 performances for people to choose from. And many of them come in under a tenner for a ticket. There are lots of free events. They're pay what you can afford events as well.
Yeah.
Free events for kids and many of the external venues. So there really is something for everyone from every aspect of the performing arts.
And this runs in parallel to the Brighton Fringe, people. So, no, not Brighton Fringe, the Brighton Festival.
So the festival takes place, also starts on the 1st of May, but they run for 3 weeks, whereas we run for the entire month. And although we work very much with them and we do co-events, particularly with artist development, we're very much our own separate organisation.
Yeah, I see the Fringe as very a lot more eclectic in terms of what they offer, and as I say, you're developing new talent, which, you know, in years to come may be part of the actual Brighton Festival.
Oh yeah, indeed. Yeah. I mean, last year, five of the acts who had booked to play with us were selected by the festival, and for me, that is a huge success because we're doing exactly what a Fringe should be doing, helping artists on their journey to become true professionals performing in major venues.
That's fabulous, yeah.
You're actually an artist in your own right, a musical artist, aren't you?
Yeah, I trained as an opera singer, actually.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Wow. They're going to do a little...
No.
Thing later.
Really?
No, they wouldn't want to hear that.
No.
I may have the build of an opera singer, but I don't sing like
one. Oh, no. Well, I think it's lots of practice to keep it up, doesn't it, to develop the vocal training.
Yeah, if you're going to be something like a singer, you are an Olympic athlete.
Right,
to
yes.
At top level.
Yeah, wow.
So... we're talking about your event. We'll go over the event at the Fringe later. But could you just let our listeners know about, because you were in the Navy for quite a long time, weren't you? So.
Yeah, I started in the Royal Navy as a radio operator, so an ordinary sailor in 1979. Worked my way up through the ranks and was having a terrific career. But there was one little dark spot in my life that I happened to be gay at a time when it was illegal to be gay in the armed forces. And in 1994, I had just been selected to be military attaché to the Prime Minister when a blackmailer got in touch. I didn't know him. He discovered that I was gay. And I met him in London in a very sort of clandestine meeting, a bit like a John le Carré novel. And he said, if you make it worth my while, I'll keep quiet about it. And I told him to F off.
Yeah.
And immediately reported the matter to the military police.
Mm.
But of course, in that sort of perverse world of being illegal, I was the one who was arrested, not him. They knew the blackmailer very well. They actually named the blackmailer.
Right.
He was in regular contact with military police because he was very useful to them. He outed people.
Right.
So nothing ever happened to him. I was... inevitably thrown out of the services. I left in January 1995. But in the meantime, I joined an organisation called Rank Outsiders, which looked after people who were either in the services and worried about dismissal or were actually under investigation or had been investigated. And it was very clear to me that this welfare organisation should turn its attention not just to looking after the victims of this horrendous policy, but should also campaign to change the policy and turn off the tap of victims.
Yes.
The audience shouldn't be in any doubt what the policy actually meant. It was quite horrendous. People very often had to have forced medical examinations to prove that they were gay. This happened sometimes to men, more frequently with women. Horrendous cases, which the subsequent inquiry, which occurred in 2022, discovered. Women held down by men while they were internally examined.
That sort of thing.
And that happened to men as well in some cases. So the whole process of interrogation by the police was really quite abusive. So much so that the High Court judge who did the investigation and the inquiry was really truly angered by what he heard from so many witnesses.
I studied in Portsmouth Polytechnic. And I've read up some of the research that you've done. It was discovered that the military had cameras in government buildings watching the entrance to the gay pub.
Yeah.
And I remember being in the gay pub as a young student and seeing what we believed to be naval personnel. And you could spot them straight away because they looked very uncomfortable to be in a gay venue. These were not gay serving people, but these were military police. Mm. But their shoes were always too shiny.
Yeah,
they had such shiny shoes. No gay person. Well, those are the wrong kind of shoes, anyway. But they stood out, and we knew that naval secret police were frequenting that venue.
Yeah,
but shocking.
Yeah, in fact, the gay venue you're talking about in Portsmouth had a camera in what was a social security office opposite, which would feed photographs through to military commands to do an identity check if anyone they thought could be a serviceman. As you say, service personnel tend to stand out a mile.
Yeah.
It was a very proactive policy of finding people out, of watching cruising areas, watching gay bars, plainclothes people in bars.
Yeah.
You know, this was not a live and let live. It was a vindictive, nasty policy to out people.
It is, isn't it? A waste of resources in terms of military policing. But also, what a waste of talent and skills for people that have spent a long time in the Navy, been skilled up, really highly professional, and yet suddenly they're just cut down in their prime.
And it wasn't based upon your behaviour. So it wasn't anything to do with sexual conduct or inappropriate sexual activity in the workplace. It was about your state of mind. I didn't know about the policy until I was a junior officer in my first ship. And I opened a letter addressed to my commanding officer containing a police report about one of our sailors. He was 17 years old. He had spoken to a friend in his mess to say, look, I think I might be gay, what should I do? And his friend reported the conversation because the rules were you had to report if you suspected that someone was gay. Now, this kid was arrested, interrogated for 3 days. He had a medical examination. And the letter came through from the police to say, you know, commanding officer, you need to discharge him. What struck me about the report was that this guy was a virgin.
Right.
So you didn't even have to have sex. It was just about your state of mind.
Your thought.
And if your state of mind was that you were lesbian or gay, you would be thrown out.
I'm shocked at that. It's just very extreme, isn't it?
It really was. And that lasted until the year 2000. It's very recent. Whereas the rest of the civilian law had changed entirely in this country, the armed forces held on to it. Rank Outsiders, they agreed to launch a campaign. We had the support of Stonewall, and 4 test cases, of which I was one, went to the European Court of Human Rights ultimately. And we won our case in October 1999. And then the government, a few months later, in January 2000, lifted the ban.
So what about people who are HIV? How did that affect them? And
well, the history of HIV in the armed forces is contradictory.
Right.
At the start of the HIV crisis in the early 80s, there was a very sensible approach to protecting members of the armed forces. After all, it was largely men in the front line or at sea, and they would often be exposed to risk by, for example, going to Mombasa in Africa, which was a known big, large area for HIV infection. And so condoms were issued to ships' companies. The army was the first in the world to develop a field testing kit for HIV so that you could give blood on the battlefield to a colleague, which was a really sensible and advanced policy. And then, of course, as the evidence started to come in, it became clear that one of the principal communities being affected by HIV was the gay community. And the moment that came to light, it was the red flag came up, and suddenly the whole policy changed. And instead of being kept in the service, were you to be positive, given appropriate medical care and being protected by going to sea or having a medical officer present in your ship to look after you, that changed overnight and suddenly people were thrown out. And actually, only 2 or 3 years ago, that policy changed and the armed forces grew up a bit and realised that those who are on treatment and undetectable are healthy and pose far less risk to anybody else than the straight boys and girls who are going around playing around, being careful.
Absolutely.
Wow, so just the stigma from HIV and being gay just sort of combined, isn't they? And just
double whammy.
Wow. So how does, when you're on board ship, so you might be deployed for, I don't know, days, weeks, months?
7 or 8 months. Sometimes.
Really, right. So so prior to just a couple of years ago, if you had your HIV treatment from a sexual health clinic, which we quite often do, so the rest of the hospital and the NHS don't know, how do you manage that in such cramped, confined spaces? If you're on a submarine, you probably have like 8 foot of space as your bunk, and that, if you're lucky, and your sharing might be hot bunking as well, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, I think that the stigma, fortunately, has changed. There are people serving today who are HIV positive. It's very difficult, particularly as you say, in a submarine where you're hot bunking, you have your tiny little locker. It is really impossible to take anything out of your locker and pop a pill without someone knowing. So you know, but the armed forces have changed. The great achievement of the last 20 years in the armed forces is how the culture has shifted. Not just in terms of diversity and inclusion, particularly for LGBT people, but also with HIV.
It's very interesting because people who are heterosexuals and are the bigger group now, aren't they, who needs...
That need testing and like present late diagnoses more often.
Yes, so it's interesting how that would... How that would change anything in the...
And the openness of the dialogue now and the fact that larger ships will have their own pride weekends, and so their LGBT community can celebrate, and the ship's company is love joining
really
in with
fantastic.
Them. It's amazing. But that creates conversations, and so there's cross-pollination about PrEP with the straight people on board from gay people.
It's just good to know that. It's kind of develops and gets more supportive, isn't it, really? So you're going to do, you're having a conversation, aren't you, for the Fringe, aren't you?
Yeah, it's someone who I first was interviewed by in 1994, Nigel Wrench. He was a PM presenter on Radio 4, very well-respected BBC presenter. Himself, the first out gay man who was HIV positive.
Right.
And he also started with another local person, Rebecca Sandals, the very first gay broadcast programme on BBC. And I think I was either his first or second interviewee, actually, when the programme first launched. So we go back a very long way together. And Nigel agreed to sort of do the in conversation. It's going to be very informal, the audience able to ask questions. And it's not just about the history of gays in the military, but it's also the work that I've done subsequently, because I like stirring where there's injustice.
Well, good. You know, people. Yeah, yeah, it's good that some people do. I mean, yeah,
you need that though, don't you? When things aren't right, and you know they're not right, you need someone to speak up and who's not, who's been there and this experience of that.
It doesn't sound like you've been daunted by the challenges that you've faced. And I must admit, this is going to be a fantastic conversation to listen to. Just looking at the summary of your biography, you've done so much more with human rights and with the arts as well.
Well, I think that the nice thing about the armed forces is that eccentrics are actually quite welcome because we tend to think differently and think out of the box.
Mm.
You know, the very first thing that I started was as an extremely junior officer. When I serving in Birmingham, in fact, there I was in a city with a huge population, global majority population, and in a headquarters of 300 people, we had one person of colour. And that, to me, was a red flag that something is really wrong, and why aren't we actually using the talent that is around?
Yes.
And so I investigated it and made a bit of a stink and made some changes to the way that we were recruiting, the way we were advertising, how we approached the interview process with people, and where we advertised. And that changed. So by the time I left, we had 15 people of colour, then 2 years later, which wasn't enough, but it was a start.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I got involved with was in a larger headquarters when we were tasked to look at the developing problem of lack of school leavers, which was going to hit us in the 1990s. And I was given an instruction to investigate how we could overcome this demographic trough, as it was called.
Mm.
And I wasn't allowed to spend any more money. I couldn't dilute training standards. I couldn't increase advertising spend. So my hands were completely tied behind my back. And I thought about it for about 5 minutes and very cheekily signaled back, "Have you thought about opening up recruitment to 51% of the population?" And I thought, they're either going to laugh or I'm going to get a bollocking. And it was actually a very positive response. It was interesting.
Yeah.
Take a look at it. And so that's how Women in the Front Line was actually born. And I wrote the initial report, which then led to a full study. Mm. So, you know, strange things happen in the military sometimes. The fact that women are now having full careers in every aspect of the armed forces did not come from a feeling that we must have equality. It was, we need people, what should we do?
And
it just so happened that somebody thought, hang on, there's equality here which might give you the solution and be a bonus.
Look for things that unite us and other things that divide us, and don't be exclusionary.
Is that like that in other countries?
The most countries have now adopted. If you take, for example, Australia, New Zealand, Israel, years and years ago had women in the armed forces, and indeed had a very liberal LGBT policy as well.
Yeah. I think with HIV, though, that might be a little bit different with different countries.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I think we have one of the more liberal policies now, but it has taken us decades to get that right.
Mm.
Yeah. It's good to hear, though, isn't it? That's more liberal and open.
Yeah.
Could you let our listeners know when your conversation, your event's on?
Yes, I'm going to be in St. James's Street at the Lantern Theatre on the 8th and 9th of May at 7 p.m. in the main hall. And you're all very welcome. But the plan is that Nigel and I will do the sort of presentation together and the conversation with everybody. And then we're going to go to the bar afterwards in the Lantern so people can have a chat with me privately as well.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
And what's your future plans? Have you got anything coming up that you can mention?
What, for the Fringe? Well, the Fringe, I tend to watch 5 or 6 shows a day and get around as much as possible just to make sure the venues and the artists are happy and so the public realise that the chair of the Fringe is actually rather interested in what's going on and that they're having a good time as well. But the great thing about May in Brighton is this buzz as the city comes alive.
It does, doesn't it?
And as the venues start building on the level and Valley Gardens, you see people's smiles and think, it's spring. Spring's arriving.
It's festival time. It's proper festival in the true sense of the word, isn't it, the Fringe? Yeah.
It springs out, and all the springs come in and it gets a bit warmer days and lighter nights.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Duncan.
It's my pleasure. Good.
Yeah, thank you. And good luck with your, events. So, yeah, check that out.
And yeah, 8th and 9th of May, 7 p.m. The Lantern Theatre, St James's Street.
Yes,
fantastic.
Brilliant. Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you, Duncan.
So we're going to finish. We're going to finish with another nautical song.
We are. Yes, this is Sailing by Christopher Cross.
Fabulous.
And good. Welcome back to the HIV Hour on Brighton 97.2 FM. And don't forget, we're also on DAB Plus Radio. We also have this show as one of our famous podcasts, which are downloaded all over the world. And thank you for everybody all over the world that does listen in to us.
Yes, thank you.
We are very proud to be sponsored by Jack Russell Technologies.
Yeah.
And we are a charity run, well, we're a non-profit radio station. So if you... we'd like to donate towards the running costs of keeping the lights on here, please go to radioreverb.com and there's a donate button on the front page.
This show is very important.
Also has its own website, which is hivhour.org.uk, and you can email the show, and we are grateful to hear from all of you, on info@hivhour.org.uk. So if you've got a question for our agony aunties, please do get in touch.
Yeah, it's worked well, that. It's really good.
The last episode was good. We did three quite different questions, and we managed to get good advice.
It's just good to get that. I've said that loads of times.
Notice that is your catchphrase.
My catchphrase. I'm going to have a T-shirt with that on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need it. Great interview with Duncan.
It was, wasn't it?
It's just so interesting to hear how, you know, the Navy and deal with...
And he was such a champion of injustice.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's the show he does at the Lantern Theatre in May will be great. I think it's at £12 full price and £10 concession. And it is a fundraiser for Brighton Fringe. So the money from your ticket will go into helping new artists that could be the next Ed Sheeran or the next... Maria Callas, you never know, do you?
You never know, actually.
You never know.
Do you ever go to the Fringe? Do you ever do things?
I do, actually. I go to more Fringe events than I do to the main Brighton Festival. Because, I mean, as Duncan said, it's like, was it 850 acts?
It's a lot, isn't it?
That's a lot of
the Fringe, isn't it?
It's just the Fringe. I mean, and some of those are free or quite affordable tickets. Up-and-coming young... Well, not necessarily young, but artists of any age, of any gender, are taking part.
Yeah.
Trying to show the world their talent.
And also, you've got the music festival. I can't remember what it's called now. It's usually on the weekend.
Yeah, there are several festivals that run parallel. During the month of May, there's all sorts of, parallel festivals happening. So
just check out the Fringe. If you want to look at what's going on, just go to www.brightonfringe.org and it's got all the information on there.
Yeah, and interesting, he's going to be interviewed by... Mr. Wrench from the BBC, who is the first HIV person on Radio 4.
Brilliant. Check it out.
Yeah. So we've got some news from local and not so far away and far away, haven't we?
Yes. Do you want to go first? Or just
So speaking of radio hosts, I noticed that the Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation has granted an award to Don Lemon. Now, Don Lemon, is from our American audience will know, is a CNN anchor.
Right,
He's been given an award to sort of highlight his... he's living openly with HIV himself, and he's been honoured for his tireless advocacy efforts to raise awareness around HIV and AIDS. His work is as the champion for the Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation, 25 HIV is not a crime campaign.
Right.
So his willingness to openly discuss his own status and champion of the cause has helped to destigmatize the conversation around HIV and AIDS. So it's really important, as you would say, to get it out there and just be visible living with HIV, isn't it? Yeah,
I think it is.
If you can and have the courage and support of people where you are not stigmatized, I think as a person living with HIV, it's important for us to be visible. And absolutely. Not to be sort of shamed, because there is no, you know, you can't judge me.
It's the way of the world, isn't it? Just
it is. It's
stigma and judging,
it affects so many people's lives, and it's probably a killer as untreated HIV.
I don't know why we're going down that road anyway. I think we've always, you know, judging and not liking certain groups.
People treating people as different.
Yeah, we're all on a planet. Yes, we're all on a small speck of a planet and we're
hurtling through space.
Yeah, I just don't understand it. So,
yeah,
but I think that's just.
Yeah, I think as long as we make our the people focus on the big things, but I think the little things, if we all focus on a little part of the world and make that a better place.
Yeah, I think that's
if that's multiplied across 7 billion people or more.
How can you do it if you know?
Yeah,
how can you
I can have no control about the wars that are going on.
Yeah,
but if I, you know, show compassion and love towards my fellow human beings, I think that
starts with us.
It does.
Starts with you, do.
Yeah, fun enough. That's the start. That's the tagline for the Terence Higgins Trust campaign, isn't it?
Yeah,
for,
starts
with HIV testing kit.
Yeah,
HIV testing week. Yeah,
it's a good slogan. That.
Yeah.
It's a good
You got some news?
I have, yeah. So, so recently there was, I think it might be February, was the conference on retroviruses and opportunistic infections. So they abbreviate that to CROI 2026, and it's in Denver.
Uh-huh.
So they cover a wide range of issues. So they've just done a couple of, there's 4 points about people getting older and the outcomes of that. So I'll just go through them quickly.
Mm.
Weight loss medications appear to work well for people living with HIV and may offer benefits beyond weight loss.
Really?
Yeah, so including improvements in liver health.
Right.
Cardiovascular risks, right. Gut integrity, and even smoking cessation.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's a good thing, isn't it?
Wow.
But they concluded that the enthusiasm for this drug class is rational, but the current prices of the weight loss medication are putting the drugs out of reach for most of the world.
They are quite new drugs, aren't they? So they're still under patent. So I think, is it 10 years for a patent drug? So other companies can make that drug.
Right.
So I don't know. They're GLP-1 things, aren't they, these weight loss drugs? So
yeah, GLP-1.
Yeah. So that's the chemical that makes you feel hungry or not, I believe, in the body.
It suppresses that.
Yeah. But great to hear that it has a positive impact on liver health, because I personally have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which was probably attributable to the HIV medication and living with HIV all these years.
Right.
So
it's amazing what the other drugs help, but sometimes it's good to know.
Yeah. What's the next?
So the next one is, this is, I'm going to really struggle with this word, but I'll try. Oropharyngeal cancer, which is cancer of the back of the mouth and throat.
Oh, right, yes.
So, I can't say.
Like esophagus? A bit like that.
I think it is, yeah. Often caused by human...
papillomavirus.
That's the one, HPV.
Yeah, that's the one.
HPV. Sorry about this, listeners. I'm trying my best. It's becoming more common in people with HIV, especially heterosexual men.
Really?
So a large Northern American cohort study found that the incidence nearly tripled between 2020, heterosexual men with HIV had the highest rates. So
that's fascinating. Yeah. So the HPV is a virus that causes warts and genital warts, isn't it? So, so now in this country, I think teenagers are vaccinated against it. But obviously, for the older generation that haven't had that vaccination, it's probably a precursor to these cancers, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it goes up to 40, isn't it? It's around age you can go up to.
Right,
to have the vaccine. Yeah. I think I tried to get it, but I was a bit too old.
Oh, I'm too old.
I know, we're too old, David. Never mind. Right.
But interesting that heterosexual men are more prone to it, because, I mean, without going into too much of the practices of gay men, they do like sucking things.
Yeah, so this is the history of low CD4 cell counts was a key risk factor underlying the importance of prompt HIV diagnosis. Ah, there you go.
Right, okay.
So getting a quick diagnosis and onto treatment helps.
Right, okay, helps.
Next one, statins don't just lower cholesterol.
Do they not?
They also appear to reduce blood pressure in people with the HIV.
Oh, really? So I'm on statins.
Yes, so am I,
Which, I mean, and the Beaver recommendations are that anybody... is it over 40 should be given statins?
Yeah, I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah, if they're living with HIV. So that does help with cardiovascular disease and other such things. But
that matters.
Blood pressure as well.
Good. Yes, that's good, because people with HIV who did develop hypertension during the study were twice as likely to go on to have a heart attack, stroke, or other major cardiovascular event.
Mm.
The findings reinforce the case for statins to reduce cardiovascular risk in people with HIV.
Great.
That's good. And the last, good. The last one is stimulant drug use, particular methamphetamine, can be seriously undermining HIV treatment adherence. Mm. So this is a bit of a negative one, isn't it?
Yeah.
But a new app-based intervention may help. The app integrates cognitive behavioural tools, medication reminders and peer support.
Right.
So this is great. Gay and bisexual men with HIV who had problems with stimulants and were given the app had 58% lower odds of having a detectable viral load after 6 months compared with the control group, although the impact was not maintained to 12 months. So
right. That's interesting, though, that people need support. Some people need support to take their medication.
Yeah.
And it's good that that's recognised and that they are rolling it out and finding different ways to treat different types of people, because we're all different, aren't we? You know, and that's what...
Yeah,
what's good for one patient, what's good for one patient it may not suit another.
It's just so important. It's great. So that's
the CROI conference. I've seen headlines occasionally in my email box about it, but I haven't really studied too much into it. But fascinating.
Yes,
great. Thank you for that.
Check it out. It's on I think it's on AIDS Map. So there's lots of other different. They did a lot of five key points of different things. So I just picked them out.
Very good.
Shall we have a quick song?
Yes, why not?
So it's another nautical one.
Yeah?
Where's the word, Mother? I think it's Keen and Atlantic, which is another great album. So.
All right, great.
See you after this.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour on Brighton 97.2 FM and DAB Plus Radio. Don't forget, you can always download our podcasts a week or so after the show has aired. And if you would like to hear a repeat of the show, go to RadioReverb.com and the when we repeat it during the week is on the listings.
Yes. Yes. And just again, thank you for listening. If you're in another country, we really appreciate it. And
we do.
Anything you want to ask us, just go onto our website.
And please get in touch with us. We love hearing from you. In fact, we've had a couple of emails come in this last week. One is a job opportunity in the local area.
Oh, okay.
So there's a Sussex Community NHS Foundation Trust. They would be your bosses, advertising for a community HIV worker, support worker. And that's if you go to the nhsjobs.com and go to the nursing and midwifery job searches and the job list, it's in there. So just very quickly, are you passionate about making a real difference to people's lives? Join us at a community HIV support practitioner and become a dynamic, compassionate team supporting people living with HIV. And I mean, just working with HIV positive people, I think, is a joy. Never the same days, you know. Twice.
I think that's right.
I said that back to the front, but you know what I mean.
I think so.
it's rewarding, and the people make it. I think
absolutely.
So if you're interested in working in the HIV sector, then that job is available. It's part time, 22 hours per week, and it's for Sussex Community NHS Foundation Trust.
Great. So I've got this is from AIDS Map.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's with the conference on retroviruses and opportunistic infections conference in Denver. So even before the Trump government slashed, I'm not sure they've done that now. I think they've revoked that, I think, but we won't go into that. The prevention facing some of the deepest cuts, very few countries in the world had enough people using PrEP to substantially reduce their HIV infection rate.
Mm.
Or even to make a noticeable dent in it.
Mm. Right.
So Dr. Andrew Hill, who was the spokesperson of the University of Liverpool in the UK, told the conference that cutting the US PEPFAR PrEP program had made the situation considerably worse.
Mm.
I'm not sure how it's going that. I don't know whether it's...
People are studying the impact it's having in different countries.
Introduced or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and the types of drugs that are affordable now as well.
In some African countries, the number of people on PrEP has fallen by as much as 98%.
Wow. Yeah.
If this trend continued, Hill said, far from HIV infections falling to UNAIDS' target of no more than 370,000 a year, there would continue to be 1.4 million infections a year, or perhaps even more. PrEP needs to be given to large numbers of people to have a significant effect on the HIV epidemic. It should be also be cheap enough to enable mass distribution and to be targeted to the people at most risk.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of this, it was currently becoming harder to access and getting more expensive.
Yeah.
because one of the most awkward aspects of HIV prevention as opposed to treatment is that most people who use a prevention method, whether that be a condom or pill or injection, would not have caught the virus anyway if they hadn't used it. Understand that. Over time, the protective efficacy of a regularly used prevention method builds up because years of failing to use it make an infection more likely.
I mean, it's shocking, really. So, you know, we've got the UN goals of having zero new infections by 2030. And yet, you know, massive policy decisions and reversals like the PEPFAR funding withdrawal and poor hygiene practices in places. And I'll mention a case later, is that almost it's like infection rates are going to be going up. So then you're left with a legacy of HIV care, which needn't have happened. Yeah. These people needn't have, no, in the future, we're going to have people living with HIV that needn't have been.
Yeah.
And there's the cost of that. It's just short-term sort of foresight. It's like knowing the I forget the word that's used, but knowing the cost of everything and the value of nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they said, oh, it's too expensive to do this. But if you didn't do that, the consequences would be a lot more expensive down the line, isn't it?
Not looking at the future, what's going
to
happen in that thing.
Yeah.
Currently, the only countries delivering PrEP to more than 42 people per new HIV acquisition annually are Australia, Denmark, and Norway, with the UK just under the wire at 14 PrEP users per new HIV infection.
Yeah.
In the UK, there were 110,000 people on PrEP. That sounds a lot, does it?
No, that's about a number of people living with HIV.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And just over 3,000 new infections last year. In Australia, there were 48,000 people on PrEP and 757 infections. Mm. So even in the US, with nearly just under 600,000 PrEP users and 31,800 new infections in 2025, only gives PrEP to 15 people per new infection. So, with some African countries, which were achieving the large numbers of people on PrEP by the end of 2024. So, it's a bit of a...
But it's interesting. I mean, listeners, if you are aware of PrEP, or if you aren't aware of PrEP, or if you know what PrEP is but you don't know where to get it, please get in touch with us and let us know, because we're just curious to find out, you know, if places like student unions are telling people about it, or in the, you know, large employers, or, you know, what sort of settings do you find information about PrEP, especially if you're not a gay man, because gay men are very well served with PrEP and HIV care. But, you know, if you're in an underrepresented part of the community, and just please let us know. We'd just be interested to find out and
get the message out.
Hear your views.
And it's just making it, normalising it, isn't it? So it's just part of the day to day.
I
know people who just take it every day, and it's just become part of their regular routine. Yeah. So it's just normalising that.
I said I'd mention another quick case or interesting story. So I was listening to Radio 4. The BBC Radio 4 on Tuesday, and they had a story about over 600 children getting HIV from a hospital in Pakistan, and it was just due to poor hygiene practices, and just shocking number of young people's lives affected by that. But if you're interested, go to BBC Sounds, and that's called Crossing Continents. Hospitals putting children at risk of HIV, but there is also a television programme called Eye Investigations Stolen Lives, and that's on BBC iPlayer, and that's fascinating viewing and quite shocking.
Yes,
as well.
Worth a watch.
Yeah. And very quickly, because I know I'm aware we're running out of time, another listener has emailed us in and wants to know, he is a practitioner in mental health and psychology, and wants to know, if you are living with HIV and have a diagnosis of autism or ADHD, please really get in touch with the show at info@hivhour.org.uk, because he noticed that over half of his clients living with HIV are on the autistic spectrum, and he wondered how that translates into managing your HIV medication and things like that.
Right. It's worth finding out. Something else. There's a... God, my brain's today is really hard to... There's a petition that that people want to sign. It's about getting... Now, let's get this straight again. Get Lanacapran Pravia treatment on NHS England.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going. This petition is going to Wes Streeting, which is the Secretary of State for Health and Social mm-hmm. Care. Without access to new life-saving treatment, a small number of people living with HIV will die unnecessarily. Our health service must respond.
Mm.
So a small number of people living with HIV need access to this the drug for their HIV treatment,
mm.
Which includes some young people who acquired HIV through vertical transmission.
That's through breastfeeding.
Right, yeah. And traditional ART doesn't work due to particular challenges with drug resistance. So, yeah, it's really important to do this. I've just signed it. Have you signed it, David?
I have, yes, a week or so ago.
Yeah, so through the National AIDS Trust. And if you go to the link, which is nat.org,
nat.org.
Yeah, so it's nat.eaction.online/lenacapravir, which is lenacapavir. Got that out. If you just go there and you can just sign the petition, which is great. I think they're looking for 500 people to sign.
It's not a lot, is it? It will get noticed.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. Anything else, David?
I think we've come to the end of the show, I think. It was a fantastic guest we had with Duncan.
Yeah, we're going to the Beaver Conference.
We're going to the Beaver Conference. We've mentioned quite a bit about the CROI conference.
Yeah.
But this is Beaver, British HIV Association. So that'll be at the end of April. So we'll be
reporting back on that.
Yeah, we will. We're going to take our little handheld recorder and we'll be dressed up in our little red... HIV, tutus. Our uniforms. Yes, our tutus. Yeah, we said we're going to get your short skirts out, didn't you?
Two pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we're looking forward to it because we went to it. It was in Brighton last year, so it was very interesting. And it just gets people together and talking about.
It's a great opportunity to meet people and find out the amazing work that scientists are doing on our behalf and for us, and you know, using us to study as well. Because you know, if they study us, they learn more about how better to treat us and treat us as human beings.
Yes. So that's next week, and we'll be back in May. So, thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
I apologise for my my mess up of.
We've had a little bit of technical problems behind the scenes. I won't go too much into detail, but it's slightly flustered us, but it's all turned out perfectly.
Yes. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you again. And we finish on your track, David.
We do. So, this is Sunshine by Dario G. Thanks for listening. Cheerio.
Cheerio. Bye. Thank you.